Biggest show we've ever done. I'm here with living legend. Right, you may have read his work, Six Gun Gorilla, X Club, Cross Badlands, X-Men Legacy, soon to be X-Force, Disenchanted with Avatar. Cy Spurrier, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
What a day to be talking to you. I don't even know what time it is, where you're at, GMT, EST, who knows, but Crossed from Avatar, you know, we recently got the backlist, the backlog of Avatar going same day as print.
Yeah. Great timing. That
first time ever, really, Avatar has been available, you know, to download their books. But with Crossed, I mean, maybe people aren't familiar. It's, you know, there's an infection that has gone out.
I mean, the way that I generally put it to people at conventions when they ask me what Crossed is about, and this is kind of a simplification, but it's about a world in which being a psychopath is contagious.
Yeah. Gosh, it makes me scared just thinking about it. And those issues, they're like literally, you know, I think morality is stripped completely from people that are infected with this. And these Crossed books are exactly that. Like, you imagine whatever these characters could do to each other when that's the case. And it definitely happens.
Yeah. I mean, that's, for me, I was about to say the joy of Crossed, but it's absolutely not a joy. For me, the value in Crossed is that it's not just some kind of bogeyman, some monster who is trying to frighten the readers. These are people who, like you said, I mean, you put it very succinctly, they are literally normal human beings who have been stripped of all their morality. And whenever, for instance, I've been there when Garth, who created this concept, when people have said to him, oh, how do you come up with these sick ideas? You must be really sick. And he put it really well. He just said, well, if you really think I'm sick coming up with this stuff, then you're not watching the news every day. I mean, this, to me, this is horror at its most valuable, in the sense that it makes you horrified by things which are genuinely horrific, i.e. yeah, the way that people behave around other people.
And when I had first read Crossed, it reminded me of what I was more familiar with, was the Walking Dead scenario, or the 28 Days Later scenario, where, you know, you're on your own and you're just trying to survive. And in the first arc of Crossed, way back when Garth did it, it followed a group of survivors just trying to continue on. And your two issues from Badlands, and then also your Wish You Were Here run for your two issues of Badlands, that kind of boils down to these two characters in particular, and how, you know, it really comes down to their story specifically in the Crossed world. And it's interesting because you don't really need to know a lot about the Crossed world just to kind of jump in and read these issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, part of the beauty of the concept is it's so simple. And I mean, like I said, it's a simplification, but this is a world where being a sadistic psychopath is contagious. That's all you need to know. And so that doesn't need to be what the story is about. That's just the backdrop. That's the thing which has changed the world. And then the stories you tell can be anything. It can be a romance, it can be a comedy, if you were that sick. It could be any sort of story that you could think of in which the thing which has catalyzed people's behavior, the thing which has changed their world, the inciting element, is something with which readers are already familiar. It's this very simple concept. And so the two issues you're talking about, yeah, I wanted to tell a really twisted, arse backwards romance, basically the aftermath of a romance. What do you do when this intense romantic love affair has been sundered by essentially the end of the world? And what does that look like afterwards? And that's the sort of thing you can do with Crossed. You can tell quite interesting, unusual stories, which don't just have to be a group of survivors trying to stay one step ahead of the bloody monsters, which we've seen 1,000 times.
Yeah. And do you think that's why, you know, so many people are drawn to Crossed? You mentioned it before with Garth's comment, you know, if you think this is sick, you know, check out the news. Do you think it's that kind of, you know, realism, or maybe almost a suspension of belief in a certain area, but a lot of the stuff that happens in these books is, like, you know, worst case scenario?
Yeah, I mean, it's both extremes. I confess I have at times grown a little frustrated by the number of people who come up to me at conventions, and the reason that they read it and the thing that they get out of it is that it's the sickest thing in comics. Mm-hmm. It's like the most extreme, the most brutal, so on. And then I thought it through, and I thought, well, you know what, if my job is to to communicate things and to entertain people, then it doesn't matter if the sort of highfalutin stuff that I'm layering in there is getting picked up on by people or not. I think a huge number of the people do think of it as a very smart, very layered, very subtexty thing, as well as being very, very visceral horror. But if all you get out of it is that it's the sickest thing in comic, then good for you. You know, carry on.
Right.
I'm okay with that.
And with Disenchanted and Wish You Were Here, you know, Avatar, for a company that hadn't gone same-day digital until now, as a company, they were very, and still are very forward-thinking with a web-first model. You know, Wish You Were Here was web-first, and it did that widescreen format. Free to read for a while.
It was something that they'd played with via Freak Angels before, which is a Warren Ellis series, and he constructed his story slightly differently. And I mean, without getting into the storytelling of it, I approached it in exactly what you've described, like the letterbox format. So each two screens that you see on the web comic will eventually be printed to one page. But yes, the model essentially is that you give it away for free, and eventually, when you put out collections of it, artifacts, people seem to want to own those as well. And you know, that seems quite nice. It seems as though, and this is something that you would be able to judge far better than I, but it strikes me that we aren't living in a world where you have to be either digital or print. You can kind of be both, and there are fairly beautiful overlaps between the two.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's a huge segment of people that maybe would enjoy a weekly format serialized, and then at the end they're like, man, I really enjoyed that. I want to get that and put it on my shelf. Some of my best friends are like that. They'll read monthly and buy, you know, the $80 hardcover and just have it sit on their shelf.
I think there's some, I don't think we're ever going to get rid of the human predisposition for owning artifacts, not just because they're nice to take down and read, but because, I mean, let's be honest, we sort of try to outwardly define ourselves to other people according to the things we surround ourselves with. And so I could very merrily read a monthly comic in digital form because I don't want the issues cluttering up my house. But once it's on my bookshelf, anybody who comes over to my place is going to judge me based on my bookshelf in
That's
a way.
Right.
And, you know, it's quite a nice way of wearing yourself. It's not about clothes. It's not about your haircut. It's about what's on your bloody bookshelf.
That's right.
And you can't really do that with your digital comic.
With Disenchanted, when that had first hit, I was really interested because you had talked about how you viewed the current state of fantasy books, where it was either, you know, one end, which was very, very serious, or the other end, which was very kind of cheeky. And you wanted to kind of put your own stake in the ground with Disenchanted.
Yeah. I'm being unfair. There are plenty of shades of gray in between, and a lot of the best fantasy work exists in that space. But equally, you can't avoid the fact that a lot of fantasy takes itself really, really seriously and suffers as a result. And I don't mean in the sense that you can't have serious fantasy. I just mean that it shouldn't be po-faced. If you're going to try and create a world, then you must accept that that world is going to in some way reflect our own, which is that it's full of tragedy and joy and fun and humor and romance and all the things that make our world as complex as it is. And if you can't build that stuff into your make-believe world, then it doesn't feel believable to me. It just feels like a bunch of people with silly names running around hitting each other, and that doesn't interest me at all.
Sure.
And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got, you know, I mean, Terry Pratchett's a fantastic writer, and I love his books to bits, but I think if you're going to be very knowing about your fantasy, if you're going to be very nudge, nudge, wink, wink, I think you sacrifice something of the importance of the allegories that you're trying to communicate through fantasy. Otherwise, what's the point of doing fantasy?
Yeah.
So Disenchanted kind of, I approached it, I mean, without waffling on, it's a story about all the folkloric creatures that used to be part of European day-to-day belief, which have all accumulated into a city in an abandoned London Underground station because nobody believes in them anymore, so they don't have any reason. And so the whole thing is very allegorical. It's a metaphor for the death of culture and the way that modern urban life is decaying the idea that tradition and religion is somehow important. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. That's one of the questions that the story asks.
Yeah.
But it's that's what fantasy does. It allows you to pose those questions in a very on-the-nose sort of way.
And I'm hopeful, too, and with the collected versions coming later, I think, you know, that's a book that would be great on the Comixology platform. And right now, if people want to check it out, it's free to read on Avatar's site.
Yeah, and it's, carry on.
Sorry. No, the one thing I did want to jump into, Six Gun Gorilla from Boom, which I love, and I compare it to, like, Westworld meets Starship Troopers, which in my head is
a good one.
Which is like the ultimate combination for people that haven't thought of this book yet. Six Gun Gorilla, I was actually, when it first came out, I was shocked. Like, you know, Six Gun Gorilla, it's a on the cover, gorilla with a gun, essentially. And when I first read it, the first thing I thought of was like Yul Brynner, Westworld. And then you also get the kind of intelligent inside jokes of Starship Troopers. Is that kind of was in your head when you put that book together?
Oh goodness! I mean, it's fascinating that you approached it like that, because one of the it's not even a joke. One of the things I struggle with is to even begin to describe what this book is like to people, and I don't think it's really. But you're right. I mean, it definitely falls in that gap somewhere. I wanted to tell a Western, and I spent a long time thinking about what it is that makes a Western a Western, and have had endless debates with people about it, and have all sorts of theories of my own, which I shan't particularly bore you with. But the one thing that does not make a Western is that it is set in the Wild West. Mm. And to give you a very, very, very brief example, one of the things that I think makes good Westerns, is a sense of an old world dying and a new world being born. And generally speaking, the most successful characters, most successful protagonists in these stories, I was about to say films, which is completely unfair. The best protagonists in these stories are representations of the old world who are fighting for the new world, even though they have no place within it. Mm. And so if you take that sort of muddle of concepts and tropes, you can pretty much do whatever you like with them. And at the same time, I had heard about this fantastic old pulp era short story character, Six Gun Gorilla, who really is just what it sounds like. It's a kind of short story serialized in Wizard magazine in 1939 about a prospector who has a pet gorilla, and the prospector gets killed by bad guys, and the gorilla goes after the bad guys. And it's kind of po-faced, and it's a little bit uncomplicated, but it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But the title is what stuck in my mind. It's one of those things that you think, God, that sounds stupid, and then you sort of think about it, and maybe there's something funny in that. And I've ended up doing what I think is very true to the notion of what it means to be a Western, but it's also about stories, and it's about all sorts of things. And the title has been both a blessing and a curse, because a lot of people will pick it up expecting it to be a fun book about a gorilla with guns. And then I hope stay around because they realize it's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But equally, I think a lot of people don't realize that it's about a lot of very important things. I mean, without spoiling it, it kind of boils down to, It's a suicidal man's attempt to reconcile himself with loss in the most bizarre way possible.
Yeah.
It's probably the work of which I am most proud in my entire career so far. And so it bugs me when people don't check it out because, it's about a gorilla with a gun. That must be stupid. And it's kind of the opposite of stupid.
And I think Jeff's art is like literally the perfect style for that book, too.
I was so lucky. I met him for the first time in New York Comic Con, but he's coming down to Thought Bubble, which is a convention we have here in the UK next week. So, yeah, we're going to be hanging out quite a lot. I can't wait. He's such a great guy and such an extraordinary artist. He's going to have a really, really big career ahead of him.
What do you find yourself reading in your free time? What do you seek out?
I'm pretty bad at the moment. As we mentioned before we started recording, I'm just in the verge of moving house, so things have been a little stressful recently. But generally speaking, I tend to check out books kind of by creators rather than books that feature particular characters. And because I'm dreadfully nepotistic, I tend to follow the work of my friends. So anything by Warren or Kieran or Jamie, Ed Brubaker, Fraction and Kelly Sue are fantastic. Garth has been a fantastic mentor to me, so I'm greatly looking forward to the stuff he's got coming out from Dynamite quite soon.
Yeah.
And of course, Mr. Alan Moore, the stuff he's been putting out, especially the stuff he's been putting out through Avatar. So, for instance, Neonomicon is, in my opinion, I mean, it sort of buzzed under the radar in some places, but I think it's up there with his best work. And I know we announced, actually, I say we, Avatar announced quite recently that he's doing more stuff for them in the coming year, and I've got the inside line on some of what that is. So that's
That's
getting me very excited.
Top secret stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah. But no, I mean, there's so much great stuff out there. I'm afraid I'm pretty lazy, and I'm not very good at getting down to the comic shops these days. But
no, that's a good list.
Follow the creators. That's the way.
Sai, I appreciate you coming on. Crossed, we have a big library across that's been added. Badlands, your work is featured in there, and Wish You Were Here, you could grab on Avatar's website. I appreciate you coming on, and I wish you the best of luck going forward.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy.